Welcome to the Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to the laboratory accreditation industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you'd like to tune into our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjlabs.com or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
All right. Can you hear me now, Alan?
I can hear you.
All right. Perfect. I didn't know if we were having some audio difficulties there, but my apologies for that there. Anyway, just to in case anyone missed that audio there, I'm not sure if everyone could hear me or not. If you cannot hear me for some reason, or if you're having difficulties, please do ping us in the chat. I'm happy to help work through any technical issues. That's why I'm here after all. As I was saying, welcome to today's webinar, Your Journey to ISO 27001 Part 2, Updates, Transition Strategy, and Implementation. My name's Amy. I'm a member of the marketing team at the Perry Johnson Companies, and I'm helping facilitate today's webinar and offer technical support to both our speakers and myself, apparently. Today, we are welcoming a special guest back. That's Alan Calder of IT Governance Limited. And I'll be introducing Alan to you momentarily. You may see him on his webcam there just now. But originally founded by Perry L. Johnson in 1994, Perry Johnson Registrars has been deeply involved in the international certification and registration industry from the very beginning. PJR and PJR UK offer accredited third-party certification to a range of standards from ISO 9001 to ISO 27001, AS 9100 to IATF 16949, and everything in between. We have a strong focus on customer satisfaction and engagement. We offer a variety of training, free downloadable information resources and white papers, as well as complimentary webinars like the one that you're attending right now. If you have any detailed questions about PJR certification programs or the process of becoming certified, I'd encourage you to visit pjr.com. But now I'm going to go ahead and get right into things, and I'll introduce our speaker today. That's Alan Calder. He's the founder and executive chairman of IT Governance Limited. Alan's an internationally acknowledged cybersecurity expert and a leading author on information security and IT governance issues. He is also the founder and, as I said, executive chairman of IT Governance Limited, a single source provider of cyber risk and privacy management solutions. Alan co-wrote the definitive compliance guide, IT Governance, an international guide to data security, and ISO 27001, ISO 27002 with Steve Watkins, which is the basis for the UK Open University's postgraduate course on information security. Alan also wrote a number of other popular books on ISO 27001 and the EU's GDPR, including the popular EU General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, and Implementation and Compliance Guide, which provides a clear and comprehensive guide to the regulation and sets out the obligation of data processors and controllers. Alan, thank you so much again for coming back to join us for part two. We're excited to have you on once more, and I will let you take it away whenever you're ready.
Great. Thank you so much, Amy, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to put my camera off, not because I don't like it, but just because it means that we can concentrate on the slides and focus on them. So this webinar is about the ISO 27001 journey. I'm going to pick up in the course of that transition strategy between the current version of ISO 27001 that was published in 2013 and the version which is due for publication later on, probably in October. But the overall structure of today is very much around the progress. So assuming that you've paid or will go back to and pay attention to the first webinar, this is dealing with the middle three steps in the nine steps to implementation success. We've been doing this for about 20 years. Governance, risk management, compliance solutions often centered around ISO 27001. We've done huge numbers of just about every kind of information security, ISO 27001 related activity across the whole of the world. The group of which IT governance is the biggest part covers software, compliance training, and a number of other major areas. Amy said, there's a bunch of books that we've written, but I'm going to pass over that. And the agenda for what I'm going to talk about today really is 27001 2022, what a transition strategy might look like, the baseline security criteria for implementing an ISMS, the five steps in an information security risk assessment, and then how to secure organization-wide commitments to an ISMS, with a finish up looking at some practical steps and solutions that can help you do that implementation. So, ISO 27001 2022, the current version of the standard, the only version to which you can comply today, was published in 2013. So it's ISO / IEC 27001:2013. Sometime in October, there will be a new version published. And so your nine steps to success will need to take into account that new standard. And the nine steps we're looking at today are steps 4, 5, and 6. The management framework. The management framework is focused on what is the standard that we're implementing, the baseline security controls, the ones that you put in place to meet your business, legal, and regulatory requirements, and then risk management itself. As I said, the transition is going to be fairly critical. Part of the question is, do we start today or what? ISO 27001 2022 be published in early October is the current expectation. These dates can slip, but it's looking fairly solid at the moment. The most recent draft of the standard and what we know about the conversations going on in the standards body suggests that the changes to ISO 27001 between 2013 and 2022 are very minor. There are a couple of minor changes to, in particular, Clause 6, which is about change management, but otherwise the standard is essentially unchanged. The area of change there is, though, is in Annex A. Annex A, as I'm sure you all know by now, is a list of possible controls from which you might make choices in order to achieve your risk management objectives. It's a referent control set. So what ISO 27001 requires you to do is to map whatever controls you do select to those listed in Annex A in order for people looking at your management system to be able to have a clear point of reference in terms of what controls you've got. And we'll look in a later webinar at how you use Annex A, what a statement of applicability should look like. But for today's purposes, really all that matters is that you've got an annex, which is a list of controls, which are specifically the names of the controls in ISO 27002 2013. So currently there's 114 controls listed in Annex A. ISO 27002 2022 was published at the beginning of this year. So we already know what the components of Annex A will be when the new ISO 27001 is published. 27001, remember, is the certification standard. It sets out what the requirements are for a management system that can be certified to ISO 27001. So Annex A is a list of controls. At some points, you're going to have to think about what you deal with them, but this is what the timing looks like. So accreditation bodies and the International Accreditation Federation will take probably about 6 months to put in place an international accreditation scheme that meets the requirements of ISO 27001 2022. So that means it'll be ready by about March. And national certification bodies, or the National Accreditation Body, ANAB in the US, UCAS in the UK, for instance, during that 6 month period should be able to get certification schemes in place, accredited certification bodies trained and ready to deliver certification services. So the earliest that it's likely to be possible for you to get an ISO 27001 2022 management system certified is probably spring next year, March or April next year. There'll be a transition period typically of 18 months. And that's typically of 18 months from the point at which the new certification scheme becomes available. And that means that during that period, you can, in effect, depending on the agreement with your certification body, certify against either the new standard or the old standard. Typically, most organizations will certify against the new standard, but hey, if you're a long way down the road towards completion of your management system, you can still certify against ISO 27001:2013. What you have to have done is transitioned to certification against the new standard by the end of the transition period. So that's likely to be around October 2024. By then you need to have transitioned to the new standard. And the how you transition is a relatively straightforward thing to do because all you really have to do is make sure that you've updated your management system documentation and you've updated the mapping that you've got in ISO 27001 Annex A. So you could start today. You could implement ISO 27001:2013, get on with it today. When the new standard is available and you know the final version of the wording, you can update your management system text and compliance to the new standard. You can update your statement of applicability at any time between now and the end of the transition period, probably October 2024, so that it is the ISO 27002:2022 control set. And you could, if you wanted to, simply map your existing 2013 controls to it. And that's very easy to do because the mapping is already contained in ISO 27002:2022. So you could simply say, I'm going to run with my 2013 controls, I'm going to map them to the 2022 control set, and hey presto, I'm already in compliance. Of course, at some point you're going to want to take advantage of the controls in the new Annex A, and you're going to want to implement new controls, but you can do that in line with business needs, almost at leisure, but you can do that and update your statement of applicability as you go. The key thing is that from a compliance point of view, you will have mapped your 2013 controls to the new Annex A, and you'll be able to demonstrate that you are in compliance with the requirements of 27001. So there is no reason not to go ahead today with implementing your management system. And so on the assumption that's exactly what you're going to do and that you're going to carry out the first three steps that I talked about last time we did this, which is really looking at setting up the project, initiating the ISMS, and beginning to get proper management commitments to the program. I'm going to look now at baseline security criteria. I'm going to look at risk assessment. I'm going to look at how you build commitment across the organization. Baseline security criteria and scope, though, is where I'm going to start. Clause 4 of ISO 27001 says you need to define the scope of the management system, and it says you need to determine the requirements of interested parties and any issues that need to be reflected in the management system. So scope first. What's in scope for the management system? And that's really up to you. Typically, what's in scope is the whole of the organization. The defining criteria for scope are that entity which you can quite clearly draw a circle around. You can identify by means of a network map or an organization diagram or something like that. What's in scope and what's outside scope? Typically, there will be a management body that is responsible for what is in scope. So if you can't identify a management body, you probably can't identify what's in scope. That's the first big clue. The scope is where there is a management body. The second is to be clear about the things that are maybe in separate geographic locations, but are still within scope because, for instance, you operate off the same IT system. So if you've got a business where the office is based in New York, but you've got subsidiaries in Paris, Melbourne, and London, let's say, and they all operate off the same global internet or off the same cloud infrastructure, and they all run the same processes, you can say, okay, they're within scope. ISO 27001, though, says that if you've outsourced a process, while the process is in scope, the organization that delivers the process is not itself in scope. So in this example, for instance, you might have an organization that's responsible for developing your infrastructure, your IT infrastructure. The development process, the process by which you determine your needs. You share them with your contracted provider by the means by which you assess the security of what's coming back to you, your deployment process. That whole process is going to be in scope for your ISMS, but the contractor itself isn't. And it isn't because it's got its own management. It's the management of the contractor is not subject to the management of the entity that's within scope. So scoping, quite a complex exercise, unless you're a very simple organization. Most organizations will tend to turn to a consultant support like ourselves, perhaps almost certainly like ourselves, to talk through how you can best scope the management system. Once you've got scope clear, the next step is to determine what we call baseline security criteria. Now, all organizations, when you start your ISO 27001 certification journey, you already have a series of information security controls in place. You're doing them already. You don't need to do a risk assessment to determine what you're already doing. You're doing them. So you're doing them because you identified a reason to do them. So your first step is to identify what security controls do we currently have in place. The second step is to identify what security controls you need to put in place to meet the requirements of regulators or to comply with laws. So if you're a financial services company in New York, you have to comply with the New York Department of Financial, the NYDFS controls. That's what you've got to comply with. You don't need a risk assessment. You have to have an information security policy. You have to implement multi-factor authentication. Those are legal requirements. So those become part of your baseline security controls. The criteria are it's required in regulation or in law. It might be required in a customer contract. Customer contract says you must have staff awareness. So you're going to put that in place in order to meet your compliance requirements. That is clause 4 of ISO 27001. Identify the requirements of interested parties. Interested parties are regulators, customers, legal bodies, judiciary. They all drive things that you need to comply with. And the big issue you need to be thinking about is not just what is the control, but you need to be asking yourself, how can I demonstrate that the control is capable of being operated in a way that's repeatable and its effectiveness is measured? Because that's what you're going to want to do for all controls. We'll look at that later on in this series when we're looking at clauses 9 and 10, which deal with measurement and measurement of effectiveness. So let me give you an example of the kind of things that we're talking about. Your legal and regulatory compliance could be driven by e-commerce, by national security, by the need to protect IP. But if, let's pretend you are a gambling organization and you're seeking a license to provide gambling service, it's highly likely that your regulator, whoever is going to issue the license, is going to say, well, you've got a bunch of customers, and there's a number of things we need you to comply with. So we're going to insist that in order to give you a license, you first of all demonstrate that you are able to meet our compliance requirements. There's a bunch of documentation that you have to have in place. We're going to insist that you can demonstrate that the information which you collect about customers, about payment cards, and about them individually, is being collected in a way that is compliant, that you're storing it in a way that meets the compliance requirements of the payment PCI DSS, and that meets the compliance requirements of whatever the privacy regulation are, which could be a national privacy regulation. It could be, if you're in the EU, it could be EU GDPR, it could be UK GDPR. But those are the baseline security requirements. So what do we have to do in order to get our gambling license? And we do all of them, and we identify, we document them, and we put them into our management system as being the baseline security controls that are there to meet those core criteria of complying with the regulatory and contractual requirements of providing this service. Once we've done that, we've then got a number of other risks, and we apply our information security risk assessments to determine what an appropriate level of risk is and how we deal with that. And the information security risk assessment, I'm giving you a real overview of the 5 steps in how to do this in a way that meets the specific requirements of ISO 27001. First of all, to establish a risk management framework. That needs to be a methodology. The methodology needs to recognize your baseline security criteria. It needs to have a risk scale so you can compare one level of risk with another. It needs to be driven by management risk appetite, and you need to determine whether you're doing your asset risk assessment, your risk assessment on the basis of risks to assets or on the basis of risks which arise in particular scenarios, or a mix. You need to be very clear in your framework as to how you're going to do that. You then need to identify risks. And for ISO 27001, you're going to identify a risk not as something which somebody thinks is a risk, but as something which specifically combines likelihood of a thing happening and impact if it does. And it's likelihood of something happening that will compromise confidentiality and or integrity and or availability of information or of the asset in which the information resides. So risk is a combination of likelihood and impact, and you're going to analyze risks by looking at threats that have a likelihood of exploiting a vulnerability. So if you have a vulnerability and there's no threat that might exploit it, you frankly don't have a risk. There's no point in investing money in patching a vulnerability which today there is no likelihood of it being exploited. Of course, there is tomorrow, so you'd want to keep the vulnerability under review, because the moment there is a threat to it, you need to be able to deal with it. Similarly, if there is a threat that points at a vulnerability, but the impact on the organization of it being exploited is minimal, you might not want to spend money on closing down or patching that vulnerability. So for every threat vulnerability combination, there's also going to be a likelihood and an impact. And it's the determination as to which impacts are acceptable that enables you to prioritize how you are going to deal with risk. So the fourth step in a risk assessment process is to evaluate risks, to compare them one with another. And it's the management risk appetite that enables you to do that in a way that helps you determine what risks to deal with and how you deal with them. And the fifth step then is how you're going to deal with the risk. You might simply avoid the risk by saying, we're not going to take it. We're going to eliminate it entirely. We will not connect to the internet. That way we don't have a risk related to internet-borne threats. You could modify the risk by, you could say, actually, we can't do business without connecting to the internet. So you could apply controls to reduce the risk. You modify likelihood or impact. You modify likelihood by having a firewall. You modify impact by having multiple layers of defense between the firewall and where the asset is. You modify impact by having a backup strategy in place. You could share the risk with a third party. So you could have cyber insurance, or you could contract with a third party to be responsible for managing that risk on your behalf. And you pay them money to bring the risk under control. Or you could simply say, actually, we'll live with the risk. So a risk where you've identified that there is a vulnerability, but the impact is minor. You might say, we'll just live with that risk. It's not going to harm us. It's a very low level. So quite often when an organization does a penetration test, it will identify hundreds of vulnerabilities, which will say if they're exploited, they have a very low likelihood of them being exploited. There's very minor damage that can be done. And most organizations will simply go, if it's a vulnerability identified as being low, then we're simply not going to deal with it. It might be, say, right at the bottom of the CVSS scale. So five steps to an effective ISO 27001 risk assessment. And the reason you want to have a formulaic approach, a structured approach to risk assessment, is because you need to be able to demonstrate that your risk assessment is going to give consistent and repeatable results. So what does that mean? It means that if somebody other than whoever did the risk assessment in the first place comes along and says, I need to repeat the risk assessment on a different asset, they can go through a set of pre-established steps and arrive at a similar kind of result. Or if they repeat the risk assessment for the asset to which it was applied in the first place, they'll arrive at the same result as was arrived at 6 months or a year ago. In other words, the risk assessment will give you repeatable, consistent results. Typically, organizations do that by using a risk assessment tool or a risk assessment platform, because that means you're not reliant on an individual to be able to do it. You're not reliant on how they build a spreadsheet. You can turn to something which is an independently built platform, which will always work in a way that delivers consistent, reliable risk assessments. So scenarios, as I said, you might look at risk assessment from a perspective of assets or from the perspective of scenarios or some combination of both. The kinds of scenarios that you might look at are, you know, what happens if we have a business interruption, which could be driven by a number of things. What happens if data is modified by people internally? So you could run through a series of particular scenarios and you could determine what the impact on the organization might be of any one of those events happening. You could have a look at scenarios in terms of what happens if a particular asset is compromised, or you could just focus on the asset. What happens if a key person, the one person who knows how to configure our firewall, is knocked over by a bus? What do we do then? What controls do we put in place to mitigate the impacts on the organization? The answer would be train some other people, have a documented procedure for configuring the firewall. You might look at how a threat vulnerability combination plays out over time. What's the impact over time? The impact on losing a particular system might be minor in the first 2 hours if it's non-critical, but it might suddenly become critical at the end of the month. So your payroll, for instance, might be non-critical for 3 weeks. You could go, well, if it gets knocked over today, it doesn't matter because we don't use the payroll system until the third week of the month. Suddenly in the third week of the month, it's critical. So you could look at timing in terms of understanding criticality around a process or around an asset. You could look at actors, you could look at threat types. Are we dealing with a nation state driven attack? Is it an attack which is a distributed denial of service attack focused on any organization providing services to the Montenegro government, for instance, in which case the answer today probably is yes, you could suddenly be an attack because there are attackers going after the Montenegrin government. So a number of different ways you could be thinking about doing the risk assessment. What you learn very quickly is that whatever your approach is, one key aspect of a risk assessment framework or risk management framework is you need to stay up to date. You need to have a mechanism for forward scanning. You need to be paying attention to what's going on in the environment because you might need to update or review or amend your risk assessment at any time as the scenario changes. Top risks that organizations should be thinking about, they're the areas where for most organizations there are likely to be serious impacts. They start with social engineering. Social engineering, whether it's a phishing attack or some other form of attack, is most cyber criminals' preferred method of breaking into organizations today. So that's top key area to focus on. You can only really deal with it by massive ongoing training and testing across the organization, which is continually updated for latest phishing and social engineering type attacks. But unauthorized network access, which could come through phishing, could come through malware, could come through inadequate passwords, a number of different ways that attackers can get access to or be able to move laterally inside a network, another major risk. Information disclosure could be somebody planning to leave the organization, takes a customer list with them, could be by mistake somebody uploads a key customer list or a staff list to a website which is not secure. It could be information included in an email which is sent by mistake to the wrong person, which means that suddenly somebody has access to information which they shouldn't have. That information might not be a list of staff. It might be your business plan for next year. It might be the financial results which you're due to be disclosing to the financial market in 10 days' time, which currently is highly confidential. Information disclosure, top 10 risk. Equipment malfunction, particularly in today's distributed environment where you have people working often from home or on the road, they could have a device go down. So imagine if I'm going to deliver this webinar and my device goes down just 5 minutes beforehand, or there is a power failure in my building just beforehand. How do we deal with that? That there could be large numbers of key people on the call. It might be a webinar for people interested in ISO 27001. It might be a webinar to thousands of analysts. How do you deal with the impact on the organization of an equipment malfunction or a loss of power? Configuration errors, huge migration to the internet, to the cloud, and digitization projects accelerated as a result of COVID. Many organizations didn't really have a proper idea of how to configure their services in the cloud, and there are therefore now thousands and thousands of organizations who have serious insecurity because their cloud deployments can be hacked. Just alongside equipment malfunction, hardware theft. You still have on-prem servers, somebody has a device stolen, any one of those can bring you an impact that you weren't expecting to have. Records destruction, what happens if somebody deletes a database that isn't backed up? What happens if you've got a whole lot of records which were on paper and you left them on paper as you shifted to cloud, but you haven't got digital copies of all of them, and then the database gets flooded or fired, the paper database, destruction of records, loss of records, somebody overwriting records, all of those can bring huge problems. Remember, under GDPR, there is a requirement that you retain data for the period of time that in your privacy notice you say you will. Having it lost beforehand is a data breach, is a breach of GDPR. Natural disasters, floods, fires, terrorist attacks, cyber war, the nation state attacks, all of those. So top 10 risks, your ISO 27001 risk assessment should one way or another be considering. And one of the reasons for pointing this out is, of course, not just that it's an important part of you thinking about your own security, but your Perry Johnson registrar assessor, when they come to be looking at how you've done your risk assessment, are likely to say, and so tell me, what have you done in thinking about the risk of information disclosure? All of these are things which could affect any organization. So I would expect any good certification auditor to be asking about these. And so you want to make sure, because, hey, doing an ISMS, you want to get it certified, you want to make sure that you're in a good position to talk intelligently to your auditor about the top 10 risks that you should be considering. And many of these may not be covered by your baseline security criteria. Some of them could be, but not all of them would be. And you can see, if you think about this, how if you've implemented what you have to do in order to comply with your regulatory requirements, thinking about your broader risks will give you a comprehensive set of controls to be thinking about in your ISO 27001 ISMS. We'll be thinking about controls a bit later on in the series. So you need to do a risk assessment. Your risk assessment needs to reflect your scope. It needs to be all the assets within the scope of the organization. It needs to be build on your baseline security criteria. So to do a risk assessment effectively, to implement an ISMS, you need commitment from across the organization. You can't do this as an information security team on your own. And if you think about it, that's not surprising, because you have many people across the organization who are involved in using information, who depend on the confidentiality, integrity, and availability of data to be able to do their job. So 44% of global boards are involved in setting the overall security strategy of an organization. That's really not good enough. An ISMS, on the one hand, can give senior management real visibility over the effectiveness of its security regime, can enable security management to sleep at night knowing that the organization has got appropriate controls in place to protect itself. But it's also an ongoing process, is effective cybersecurity. And senior management have an essential role to play in setting the risk appetite and in providing leadership for the organization. And that includes committing resources to the project and providing personal example around information security. So the starting point to get organization-wide commitment is really senior management. Risk appetite, how much risk are we prepared to take? And you know, there is some risk which all organizations will take. The only way you can have no risk around information is to put all of your risk onto a onto a USB stick, encrypt the USB stick, and then throw it into the ocean. That way you're safe. But you also don't get to do business. You have to take some risk in order to do business. You have to share data with people. You have to talk to clients. You have to accept emails. So you have risk. Management's job is to determine how much risk is acceptable. Where is the balance between reducing likelihood and living with impact? Because if there's likelihood, there's going to be an impact. What's the right balance? And management risk appetite is the key to determining that. So very early on in putting the risk assessment process together, you need to talk to senior management and say, how much risk can we take? What are we prepared to live with in the terms of impact in order to operate the business effectively? Once that's clear, the information security team can get on with determining what the appropriate controls might be in order to implement and implement an information security management system that meets management's risk appetite and requirements. Reporting to the board on how you go, on how effective it is an important part of building communication that enables the board not just to support the information security team, but to support across the organization as a whole to make sure that everybody understands that they have an accountability for information security in their own particular area. And part of that is making sure that the CISO is reporting appropriately within the organization. Management need to be aware of, needs to be on top of the CISO reporting activity. It needs to be impossible for the IT team to hide information security failures. The board needs to be aware of that. So however this how the CISO reports has to involve senior management getting clear information from the CISO about the state of information security inside the organization. So why do you need organization-wide commitment? Because everyone has a role to play in ensuring the confidentiality, integrity, and availability of information. And that means that everyone has a role to play in the ISMS. The who is everybody. If you work for the organization, if you're a contractor or an associate, if you're dealing with information or data or the systems of the organization, you have a role to play. Staff awareness is a key part of how you do that. Building basic knowledge of information security best practices helps reduce preventable mistakes, and it's engaging training tools, thought-provoking activities, updates, circulars, management updates. All of those are part of how management goes about working with the IT information security teams to build organization-wide commitments. And it takes time. Building organization-wide commitments typically inside an organization will be there by the second or third year of an ISMS. So you can get ISO 27001 certification without an organization-wide commitment because you can point at the steps that you're taking, you can point to the fact everybody's had basic training, you can point at how you're auditing the management system, you can point at your forward plans. What you'll see typically year on year is that as you measure commitment, you'll see greater levels of commitment, you'll see reducing errors around CINA of data. So you'll be able to demonstrate over time that the ISMS is becoming more and more effective. So you don't need to have a completely effective 100% firing on all cylinders ISMS in order to secure commitment. You need to have something which complies with ISO 27001, and you need to be able to demonstrate that you're on the journey, that you're going to be getting better month in, month out. Organization-wide commitment is the key step to do that. The questions management should be asking is, what are the top risks facing our organization? Have we dealt with them? Are we conducting regular updates to our information security risk assessments? Are we dealing with changes in the threat environment? Are we testing our systems before a problem arises? Are we doing penetration tests quarterly, half yearly? Annually is probably not often enough given the speed with which new vulnerabilities emerge. Do we have a proper effective information security awareness program? Do we measure not just engagement, but effectiveness? How good are our response plans if we have a breach? Have we tested them? Or are we just going to try and work it out on the day that there is a breach? It's a bit late then. Do we have enough cyber insurance? Cyber insurance is much more expensive now than it was a year ago. There are fewer providers. Are we meeting the requirements of our cyber insurance policy? If we go and claim under it, are they going to say, yes, but you're not doing X, Y, and Z, so we're not paying you out? When did we last test our recovery procedures, not just incident response, but getting our sisters back up and running? Those are the kinds of questions that the senior management should be asking of the CISO and of the information security team on a regular basis, because it's satisfying yourself around all of those that enables you as a management to be satisfied that you've got organization-wide commitment and you've got an ISMS which is genuinely adapting to the challenges and changes in your environment. So how do we go about doing that? Some practical steps, of course, talk to us. IT governance USA, same in the UK, in the EU, we can help. We can give you the skills you need if you're implementing it. You can go on a lead implementer training course, an internationally certified ISO 27001 lead implementer course. We can do a gap analysis. We can come along and tell you exactly what you need to do, what the gap is between all the good things you're doing today and what you need to have in place to meet the requirements of ISO 27001. Hey, we can do it for you. We can not just do a gap analysis, but we can deploy a consultancy team either to do something bespoke or to effectively simply implement a management system that meets the core requirements of ISO 27001 in which you can, in time, yourself improve and make more and more bespoke. We can deploy a bunch of tools and services that can help you implement that. We've got risk assessment tools, we've got staff awareness training. All of those kind of things are available to you through any one of our IT governance websites. And before I go on to talk about the next webinar, let me then just move on to questions. As Amy said at the beginning of this, if you have questions, we're very happy to answer them. The place to put the questions is into the webinar chat function. So please do simply type questions in there. We will deal with any questions. Amy will pick them up. She'll share the questions out. We'll answer them. If we don't have any questions that you want answered, then we'll all go home. So in the chat function, feel free. I'll give you a couple of minutes. If there are any questions on any aspect of what we've covered today, do type your question into the GoToWebinar chat function on your control panel.
Yeah, absolutely. The questions tab or the chat tab, both are great options. Go ahead and send any questions. Alan, I did want to say thank you so much for this comprehensive overview. I have a couple of questions that I've been penciling in over here, so I'm going to field those to you while we wait for other questions to come in. And maybe it'll spark some other curiosity from our attendees. In terms of GDPR, you know, obviously you're based in the UK. I'm over here. PJR is over here, primarily in the States. Do you see anything similar to GDPR coming to North America, coming to other areas of the world? I mean, obviously, it was a huge deal when it first came into place. You know, how do you see that panning out in the next 5, 10, 20 years?
We see, it's a good question, Amy. We see a number of countries around the world implementing a data protection regime similar to GDPR. Brazil's already done so. A couple of other countries in South America. You know, there's 27 countries in the EU that have done that. India is just revising its data protection bill. It looks as though it'll go much the same kind of way as the EU has done. So it's GDPR has pretty well set the standard, it looks like, for global GDPR compliance. The US is a kind of interesting point. There are now, I think, 4, maybe 6 different states in the US which have implemented their own version of a data protection law, a statewide data protection law. And that begins to throw up challenges for organizations for trading across more than one state, because compliance gets to be really difficult. Even more difficult if you're trading into the EU, because then you've got to comply with the EU GDPR. And then there is the problem of data transfers from the UK or the EU to the US. And because there is not a national or a federal data protection law in the United States, that's a very difficult thing to do legally. So there's an awful lot of pressure, and there has been for some years now in Congress, for a federal data protection law that would deal with personal data protection. And it looks as though maybe it's got more legs on it right now. We don't know what the midterms will do to the makeup of Congress and what that will do to this kind of legislation. But I think that sooner or later, there has to be a US, there has to be a federal data protection law in the US, because it's simply going to make life easier for US businesses and for international data transfer.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. We do have a question here from Aubrey in the audience. Aubrey is wondering if you could clarify what the acronym CISO means.
Chief Information Security Officer. It's either a specific role inside the organization. The organization might make the person in charge of information security, might also be the IT manager or the head of IT or whoever it is. The CISO is, if you like, the role of the person who you want to be point person for information security or cybersecurity in your organization.
All right, thank you. Aubrey, I hope that answers your question. If you have any more clarification that you'd like, please let us know. Really quick, Alan, I'm gonna put up all of this great contact information you had put on another slide, just so people have it for reference. As I said at the beginning, the slides will be available for download from the PJR website, but if you maybe wanted to take a photo of this slide for the contact info with your smartphone or similar, that might also be a great idea if you have other questions or you wanted to check out some of the resources that Alan mentioned. All right, let me see another question here. With the new upcoming version of ISO 27001, do you see any changes in how it might integrate with other certifications, or is it too soon to tell?
Because ISO 27001 2022 is unchanged from, to all intents and purposes, from the 2013 version, it will continue to be as easy to integrate with other management systems as it is now. It's very easy to integrate 27001 with ISO 9001, 14001, 45001, any ISO standard. It's really easy to implement because the clause structure is exactly the same. Clauses 4 through 10 are exactly the same. Yeah, you've got subject-specific policies and procedures, but it's very easy to integrate. It's quite easy to integrate ISO 27001 with some other control frameworks like the CIS 18 or the NIST cybersecurity framework, because Annex A is a referent control framework, so you can map any other controls to Annex A and then get an international certification to ISO 27001. So it's already very easy to integrate with other management system standards. It'll go on being as easy.
All right, great. Let's see. All right, here's a question that comes from the entire concept of management buy-in, you know, having you know, all levels of management be committed to the idea of having a solid ISMS. What would you recommend, you know, say a business has upper management that maybe is not so tech savvy or doesn't have the familiarity with IT concepts and, you know, cybersecurity concepts. Are there any resources or methods you might recommend for helping gently educate these types of people to the needs of solid ISMS?
Yeah, I think the first thing I would say is don't talk to them in tech terms. Talk to them in business terms. Talk to them about how their customers or your customers want to know that they can rely on you to protect their data. Talk to them about how your customers want to know that you're going to be around in 6 months' time, that you're not going to have a cyber attack that knocks you out. Read in the newspapers as much as they like about the companies that find themselves being suffering huge cyber attacks, going out of business, going into chapter 9 or chapter 11, where executives get fired because of cyber attacks. They don't need any cyber knowledge to understand that those are the potential impacts. And say to them, what an ISO 27001 management system does is put you, the management, in business charge of how much risk we take. You don't need to understand the detail of the cyber risks. That's what you pay us for. But what you need to do is tell us how much impact you want to have, where you want us to draw the line between being able to deal with what goes on in the real world and limiting impact. You tell us that in terms that make business sense, we'll translate that into tech terms. That's how I go about doing it. I absolutely would not try and teach management tech terms because, you know, management's really only interested in the top line and sometimes also the top line. And then at other times, it's also going to be the top line again. And you talk to them about anything complicated, they lose interest. So just focus on the top line.
Absolutely. Keep it down to dollars and cents and don't let their eyes glaze over with the tech talk. All right. I'll pop one more question in here unless someone else drops a question in the questions tab on GoToWebinar. Alan, what would you say is the most commonly overlooked risk in terms of risk analysis?
It does vary a bit, but it tends to be the embedded risks, the failure to recognize that you've got specific assets which you're so used to using as an organization. So it might be an HR database. It might be, most people are aware of customer databases, but they often don't think about their HR database and how critical and valuable that information is and what happens to the organization if it's compromised. They often don't really think about the risks to the organization of mobile users, particularly around endpoint compromise. They think, well, you know, they're fine. They've got their own devices. They can work. They don't think about, but they were supposed to be delivering a webinar this afternoon. So it tends to be, people tend not to think about the things which are really in front of them, right in front of their face. They tend to think about the things which are slightly more esoteric, that are slightly less likely to happen. You know, you're going to get hit by a phishing attack. So people think about phishing attacks. They don't think about what happens if I go onto a website that I shouldn't go onto. They don't think about how do I make sure that when people are sending an email, they don't just pick the first email address that comes up with the auto-fulfill function in email. They don't think about the stuff that's right in front of them because it's right in front of them. That tends to be for organizations where the risks are that they miss.
Absolutely. Those little things that you take for granted as being safe are not safe usually.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, I didn't see any other questions come in, so I'm going to go ahead and put up the information, save the date, go to the PJR website and register for the next installation or installment in this webinar series. Alan, did you want to talk a little bit about what we're going to cover next time?
Yeah, we're going to cover the final three steps. So nine steps to success we talk about as your ISO 27001 implementation journey. We'll talk about the final three steps in that process, obviously sort of pretty high level. We'll also talk about how you can integrate privacy compliance into your management system. So whether you do ISO 27701 or not, that can be part of the scope of your management system, but certainly protecting personal data or personally identifiable information should be in any case built into your information security management system. So we'll be covering that as one of the specific elements in looking at the three remaining steps in your nine-step journey to success.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to it, certainly. So I hope everybody who attended today does register for part three, and we're looking forward to it there. As I said at the beginning, this webinar has been recorded. The slides will be available for download. So I would absolutely encourage you to take the recording, take the link, send it to anyone who you think might find it useful, encourage them to sign up for part three, or go back and watch part one as well. All the recordings, as I said, will be on our YouTube channel, completely free of charge. You can simply go to YouTube and search for Perry Johnson Registrars, and the channel should come up near the top of the results. Alan, once again, thank you so much for a fantastic webinar. Any parting words of wisdom for the audience?
The cyber risk in the next 6 months is going to be significantly greater than it is now. The repercussions of everything that we see happening on the cyber warfare front pans right the way through into nation state and criminal activity. A bit of worry about economy, recession, inflation means people think that cybersecurity, information security is optional or is a discretionary spend. It really isn't. If you think of being connected to the internet as a bit like being on a cyber floodplain, you're going to get flooded in the next 6 months. You need to be taking action today to deal with your information security risks. So if you haven't started an ISO 27001 journey, start now. If you're on the journey, accelerate, get there as quickly as you can.
All right. Thank you again, Alan, for your time and your great vast array of knowledge. We truly appreciate having you on, and we will see you all in the next installment of our series. Hope you all have a great rest of your week and stay safe out there.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.